Siobhan Chapman here. Today we are joined by head of the UBS Advanced Planning Group, Ann Berkey, who will be interviewing senior wealth strategist Rebecca Sterling, where she will highlight various tax law developments to look out for as we near the end of the year. Ann and Rebecca are both members of the Advanced Planning Group, which educates high ultra net worth families and individuals on various topics of interest, including estate planning, tax planning, family office structuring, and charitable giving. Ann, I'll pass it over to you.
Thank you so much. Rebecca, you just recently wrote a wonderful piece that highlights for clients and advisors the upcoming changes potentially in the income tax laws. And everyone keeps talking and referring to the sunset of certain tax provisions at the end of 2025. What does that mean?
Thanks, Anne. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 made major changes to the federal tax code. Some, like reducing the federal corporate income tax rate, are permanent changes. Others are set to expire after December 31st, 2025. Congress might extend some or all of the changes that were made by the Act, but any changes that Congress does not extend will expire, and the law will revert to the pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act law on January 1st, 2026.
Although one of the big potential changes will be the reduction in the lifetime gift tax, estate tax, GST tax exemption, your piece really focuses on how the potential sunset will affect income tax provisions of the code. Can you describe some of the provisions that might be most relevant to our individual clients?
First, marginal income tax rates and brackets are scheduled to revert to the pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act law. Our federal tax system is progressive, which means that in theory, the more income you earn, the more tax you pay. The brackets provide dollar thresholds above which a taxpayer's income is taxed at a higher marginal rate. For example, the current rates on ordinary income are 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, 32%, and the highest at 37%. As far as brackets go, for an unmarried individual, they reach the 35% bracket at about $243,000 of income and the 37% bracket at about over $609,000 of income. For married taxpayers filing jointly, they reach the 35% bracket at about $487,000 of income and the 37% highest federal bracket at over $731,000 approximate of income. Without Congress acting to extend the rate cuts, the rates will revert to the prior rates, 10%, 15%, 25%, 28%, 33%, and the highest being 39.6%. The brackets would also change so that lower amounts of taxable income will be taxed in a higher rate bracket, but those brackets should continue to be adjusted for inflation. So when I said theoretically, higher income individuals should pay more tax, the only sort of caveat there is that with respect to capital gains, those rates are different. They are 15% and 20%. So for individuals who have a lot of capital gain income rather than ordinary income, these rate changes might not make as big of a difference.
Is there anything that individuals may consider doing before 2026 to reduce future tax liability, given that there may be an increase in the income tax rates?
Sure, that's a great question, Anne. Individuals who may be affected by higher marginal income tax rates may consider accelerating ordinary income to the extent it's possible to do that. One way might be to convert a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, or, if permitted, a traditional 401k to a Roth 401k. Or individual taxpayers may accelerate distributions from traditional retirement plans. However, it requires careful consideration before doing this because sometimes the benefit of the tax deferral, essentially earning income or appreciation on the unpaid tax liability, would outweigh the benefit of lower taxes paid sooner. So financial modeling can help answer this question, also talking to your CPA or tax advisor.
Great. What about changes to income tax deductions?
Sure. Well, the standard deduction was a big change under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So the standard deduction was almost doubled under the Act to $12,000 for unmarried individuals and $24,000 for married couples. Indexed for inflation, that's $14,600 for unmarried individuals and $29,200 for married taxpayers filing jointly. That increase resulted in a lot of individuals who used to itemize their deductions, finding the standard deduction to be higher than itemized deductions and more valuable because you only get to take one, whichever one's more useful. because many common deductions like the charitable deduction are itemized deductions, the increased standard deduction under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act effectively eliminated the tax benefit of making charitable contributions for taxpayers who use the standard deduction. In fact, nonprofit groups are calling for the extension of non-itemized charitable deductions allowed under the CARES Act. And the change that might occur is that that standard deduction is going back to the prior amount, so itemized deductions might become more valuable again. Another change is with respect to itemized deductions. So some of the itemized deductions will revert to pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act law. Those are the minimum, the maximum deduction for cash contributions to public charities, which is 60% of adjusted gross income. That will revert to 50% of adjusted gross income. The mortgage interest deduction is in most cases limited for mortgages obtained after 2017 to $750,000 of principal amount. That will revert to a $1 million principal limit. And home equity lines, which are currently not deductible unless they are within that $750,000 overall limit, will become deductible again up to $100,000. Miscellaneous itemized deductions subject to a 2% floor, which are tax preparation fees and investment management fees, they're not deductible currently under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But after the sunset, if it occurs, those expenses will be deductible again for itemizers. And finally, and what's on a lot of people's mind is state and local taxes. Those can only be deducted currently up to $10,000 for itemizers, and that should be hopefully unlimited after the sunset, with the caveat that the overall limit on itemized deductions will be reinstated. So that limit reduces an individual's itemized deductions by 3% of the amount by which their adjusted gross income exceeds a certain threshold. In 2017, that threshold was $261,000 approximately for individual taxpayers and $313,000 approximately for married taxpayers filing jointly. So the higher your income is, the more reduction there is in itemized deductions. So although we're all excited about some of these itemized deductions potentially coming back, they could be limited in value.
Can you talk to us about changes to certain income tax deductions?
Sure. So the first big one is the standard deduction. The standard deduction was almost doubled to $12,000 for unmarried individuals and $24,000 for married couples. Indexed for inflation, that's this year, $14,600 for unmarried individuals and $29,200 for married taxpayers filing jointly. That increase resulted in a lot of individuals who used to itemize their deductions. So, for example, if they had mortgage interest to be deducted and charitable deductions, that made the standard deduction, these changes, more valuable. So those itemizers no longer may be itemized because it doesn't make sense to do so. You only take itemized deductions if they are larger than your standard deduction. So this effectively eliminated the tax benefit of making charitable contributions for taxpayers who use the standard deduction. In fact, nonprofit groups are calling for the extension of the non-itemized charitable deduction that was previously allowed under the CARES Act. The other deductions that may be changing are itemized deductions. So some of the itemized deductions also revert to the pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act law. Those are, number one, the maximum deduction for cash contributions to public charities. Currently, it's 60% of adjusted gross income or AGI, and that'll go back to about 50% of adjusted gross income or AGI. Number two, the mortgage interest deduction is in most cases limited for mortgages obtained after 2017 to $750,000 of principal value, so interest on that amount. That will revert to $1 million principal limit, and the home equity lines of credit up to $100,000 should become deductible again. They are not currently deductible. Miscellaneous itemized deductions subject to a 2% floor. Those are tax preparation fees, investment management fees. Those are not deductible currently as itemized deductions, but after the sunset, if it occurs, those expenses will be deductible again for itemizers. And then finally, state and local taxes, that's a big one for a lot of us. They can only currently be deducted up to $10,000 for itemizers. That should be unlimited again after the sunset. However, those itemized deductions may not be as valuable when they come back as some people may think, because there is still, or what will be reinstated actually, is the overall limit on itemized deductions. So that limit reduces an individual's itemized deductions by 3% of the amount by which their adjusted gross income exceeds a certain threshold amount. In 2017, that threshold was $261,500 for individual taxpayers and $313,800 for married taxpayers filing jointly. So I think the bottom line is, even though some itemized deductions may be more valuable and the standard deduction will revert to the prior level, so itemizers may start itemizing again, there's still going to be a limit that's reinstated on the amount of itemized deductions that you can claim. So we're not quite sure where it will pan out. It'll be a case-by-case basis for individual taxpayers.
So do the potential changes to the income tax deduction mean that everyone who itemizes will ultimately pay less tax after the sunset if that occurs?
So not necessarily, unfortunately. Everyone's personal income tax situation is unique. One challenge is that many of the itemized deductions may be limited in value for high income earners due to the overall limitation that I just mentioned on itemized deductions. Another is the alternative minimum tax, or AMT. So just considering the example of state and local tax deductions, even if the itemized deduction is not subject to a $10,000 cap after 2025, it may not be as valuable as you may think for the following reasons. First, many states reacted to the SALT cap by enacting workarounds for tax attributable to income earned by pass-through entities. Those workarounds were referred to as pass-through entity tax credits. Essentially, the entity paid the state income tax on behalf of the owners up to a certain amount for income attributable to the entity. That in turn reduced the federal taxable income that passed through to the owners and reduced their federal income tax liability with respect to the entity's income. Then the state provided those taxpayers a personal state income tax credit for the income tax liability that the entity paid to the state. What that effectively did was it reduced the federal taxable income that passed through to the owners. The federal benefit of that pass-through entity tax regime is not a deduction, so it's not subject to the overall limit on itemized deductions when it's reinstated, whereas the SALT deduction is subject to that limit, right, the overall limit. So if the PTET, pass-through entity tax regime, expires for your state with the sunset, some business owner taxpayers may ultimately pay more federal income tax. Second, state and local taxes are added back for purposes of calculating the alternative minimum tax. And the alternative minimum tax, which I'm going to talk about more in just a second, it's a 28% tax calculated on certain income with add-backs, like state and local taxes. The AMT threshold and the exemptions might be reduced after the sunset. So again, these deductions might not be as valuable as we think they will be after the sunset.
Are there any other notable provisions that could be changing after 2025?
Yes. So I just was talking a little bit about the alternative minimum tax. It's a 28% tax on income calculated differently than regular income tax for purposes of ensuring that high income earners who have a lot of deductions pay a minimum level of tax. Those exemptions and thresholds for the AMT will revert to lower prior levels. So a lot of taxpayers who haven't been paying AMT for the past 5 or 6 years may have to be paying AMT again. Another notable provision is the qualified business income deduction. This deduction was intended to provide parity between the lower 21% C corporation income tax rate and the income tax rate on pass-through entity business income. It allows individuals whose businesses are organized as pass-through entities or sole proprietorships to deduct up to 20% of qualified business income, subject to limitations based on certain wages and compensation paid and the unadjusted basis of property held by the business. It phases out for most high-income individuals. Although it might be tempting for owners of pass-through entities to consider operating as a C corporation after this deduction expires to take advantage of the lower rate, double taxation might effectively eliminate a benefit. But that's one thing people are talking about, is that, you know, this qualified business income tax deduction may disappear. And so C corps have lower tax rates. So I think those are really the most notable other provisions.
One last question. Can you clarify whether the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act affected capital gains rates?
Yeah, that's a great question, Anne. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act did not affect capital gains rates. So there's the 0% bracket, the 15% rate bracket, and the 20% highest rate bracket. And those won't change under a sunset, although, of course, there's always the potential for legislation to alter those rates, but that should not be an automatic change because it wasn't part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. We will be monitoring what Congress does, if anything, to extend the provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And in the meantime, your piece really provides a great recap of where we are now and where we might be heading. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Anne.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.